Welcome to a special half-term edition of Creature Wars, where zoologists and my son get fighty. First, let's meet our guests. This week we have first-time contributor Sarah Barfield-Marks, stalwart Emma Parkin, and my very favourite contestant this week, Max Wayne, fruit of my loins. And expert on various different animals. Okay, Sarah, can you tell us which creature you're representing today?
I'll be representing the grey wolf. So, should I tell you a little bit about them?
Just tell us a couple of things about the grey wolf.
So, grey wolves can live just about anywhere in the northern hemisphere, so very adaptable. They go around in packs, so you're almost never going to find a lone wolf. And they can get up to 6 feet. So,
wow.
Yeah, formidable opponent.
That's very tall.
I didn't know wolves got that big.
Not tall, but, you know.
Yeah. Long. But if they stood up, they'd be really tall.
Yeah, essentially if they stood up, yeah.
Okay, and Max, can you tell us which creature you're representing?
A tardigrade.
What's a tardigrade?
A tardigrade is also known at, most commonly known as a moss piglet or a water bear. And it's the most indestructible animal on earth.
Okay, Nana, what are you representing today?
Hello, everybody. I am championing the Namib Desert Golden Mole.
Oh my god, what is that?
It's a cool little mole which is blind and has a small head. And you'll find out how it moves around and senses the world later.
Before we start, let's have a run through of the rules. There are three rounds during which each creature must face a scenario and attempt to survive it. Contestants, as your creatures cannot speak for themselves, you must speak for them. If you think that your creature is not up to the challenge, you can turn over your wild card, which have been made for you by your fellow contestants, and you can use the creature that's written on the wild card instead. You may only do this once in the competition. When all the contestants have made their arguments, a judgment will be made. I am the judge.
I'm the judge!
And the judge's rule is final. Okay, let's have the first scenario. After a period of unrest, the UK is having a revamp and we need an emblematic animal to go on the new flag. Why should it be your creature?
Oh, God. okay.
So, I reckon perhaps Sarah might be best.
If you want to, Sarah, do you want to go first?
Okay, well, I know wolves aren't in the UK at the moment, but I feel like there's a strong case to bring them back. You know, they might be able to represent the case for rewilding in Britain. They are majestic, they're beautiful. God.
So what's this about them rewilding in Britain?
They're all so deadly.
They're deadly, but you know, they actually have killed hardly any humans, so they're not as deadly as people think. They're
it's
deadly
like
for
sharks.
Sheep, so you know, not
yeah,
that
like
ideal
sharks.
For farmers, but you know, I think that'd be quite an attractive addition to the flag. So that's the case for the wolves to
well,
go on the flag.
It has been a period of unrest, so maybe they've been brought back.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
All right, okay, Max, the tardigrade. Why should the tardigrade be on the new British flag? We're getting rid of the Union Jack. I'm not sure why.
It could stay the same. We could just use like the colouring ink could be done with just like little tiny pictures of multicoloured tardigrades like going like for the blue stripe, loads and loads of tardigrades going down that way, loads and loads of blue slightly bigger than the real version pictures of blue tardigrades going round for there and the other ones.
Yeah,
all around it, so it could virtually just stay the same, but if you looked really closely, it was just made out of a load of tardigrades.
Because they're microscopic, aren't they? So you wouldn't be able to see them unless they were a little bit bigger.
Yeah, so you obviously make them a bit bigger.
Yeah, I like that idea, though.
That's cool. Well, I think that would be quite a nice flag, actually, a kind of weird pixelated one. And what do you think the tardigrades represent to Britain?
Science? Don't know. I didn't really think about
indestructibility.
That one. Indestructibility. Yes.
Yeah. Like we've come through a period of terrible.
Yeah, like when Hitler tried to take over the world, basically.
So we're resilient as the British.
Okay.
All right, so I think you've got a really challenging...
Okay. So the Namib Desert Golden Mole is mostly found in Africa, in Namibia. However, if there's a period of revamp, maybe they've been brought over to the UK. They live in sandy, dirty areas, so they could live on the beach, or they could live... in the dirt of the fields, although they don't have to live here to be our emblem. And they're quite small and quite cute. They're about 8 to 10 to 20 centimetres. They're golden, as their name suggests. They have quite... Because their eyes are kind of devolved a little, their eyes are quite small, and their noses and snouts are quite squished. So a bit like the small kind of, like, purse dogs, I suppose, is kind of how they look. They have like Yorkie, but like not with the horrible ramifications, because they've evolved this naturally rather than through artificial selection. And they're very cute and very small, and they have a really amazing seismic vibration detecting abilities, which is how they find their prey. So they have quite cool, the middle ear bones have evolved such that the hammer bone is absolutely huge by comparison to all the other bones. And they have evolved a bit like rudimentary seismic earthquake indicators. There was this big kind of... I know I'm going on a ramble, but that's fine. There was this big kind of original Chinese emperor who created a bowl-shaped seismic earthquake detector with four dragons in the corners, and each of them had a ball in their mouth. And when the ball of the corner fell out, that was the direction that the earthquake was coming from. And the hammer bone is a bit like that. So the direction it bangs on all the other bones shows the direction that the vibrations are coming from. And they stick their head in the sand, and they can use the vibrations to find... They can hear dune grass blowing in the wind. They navigate to the dune grass, and then they eat all of the animals in the dune grass,
so
which is cool.
You're getting round to a point...
So basically they're cute, and they have a good adaptability, which I think if we've come through a period of rest, we need to be adaptable. So they're cute, they're small, they're fluffy, and they should be on the flag.
Do they look anything like the star-nosed mole?
A little, but they don't have the prominent star bit of the star-nosed mole, but they look like star-nosed mole.
A few people who find them absolutely revolting, so...
Yeah. But they're really cute. But the thing is,
convince me that
they find the star-nosed mole revolting because of the tentacles. So star-nosed moles are related, but they have kind of tentacles around their mouth to look like a star. But the Namib golden mole doesn't have that because it uses its inner ear bones instead. So it's a bit like a kind of, imagine a normal mole, but just a bit more hunched, with an earthquake detector, and slightly more like broad shoulders, because they've got quite muscly shoulders. Mm. So kind of like a little bit like... a mole wearing a hood is what they look like.
The seismic detector is technically just like me hitting the ground and then listening to the vibrations.
Yes, exactly like that. It's but they have special apparatus, so they can hear different frequencies to you.
So that's sort of like if I got a really good hearing aid that made me be able to hear like virtually everything.
Yeah.
And then just hit the ground with a huge mallet.
Pretty much, but inside their head. Anyway, what do you think?
All right. Okay. That was a great ramble. I enjoyed it.
I love rambling.
I like to find out those kind of interesting
facts. That was all my interesting facts for today, though.
Sure, that it was actually relevant.
No.
So, and as they're really unlikely to live in Britain because they come from quite a hot
Africa.
Country, and they're going to be basically freezing here, I'm not going to pick them. So it's between the mole and the tardigrade.
The wolf and the tardigrade.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's between the wolf and the tardigrade. And... As Max is my child, and I like the idea.
He did put a way stronger case forward than me.
And
so.
Me.
Also, biologically, I need to propagate the success of my own genes.
Now, you can't use this for every time, okay?
Yeah,
this is your one time you can do this.
Yeah, you can't use this again.
Okay, and also, I think it would be a really cool flag.
It would look pretty artistic.
Yeah, it would look like you just got a pixel and then just, like, turned it into a tardigrade and then just, like, used the pixelated Union Jack and then just, like, used the tardigrade instead of the pixels.
Very psychedelic.
So, in light of all those things, I'm going to let fate say that Max wins that scenario.
Yay!
And on to the next scenario. Okay. Meteor strike. A giant meteor has hit the Earth. Brian Cox saw it coming, but he didn't tell anybody.
Ugh, Brian Cox.
God.
And now the sunlight is being blocked, it's cold, and the air is full of ash.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Mm.
Who cares?
How will your creature survive?
I think the tardigrade's got to go first.
Yeah.
Okay, go tardigrade.
I only need to say two words here. The tardigrade would just go, who cares?
Why would the tardigrade just go, who cares?
At any possible point, if it got too hot or too cold or too generally bad, it would just go like... just go into the tundra, they come back in about like eight years, maybe even 200.
So what can it do? Can it kind of put its body to sleep then? Or
it goes into the tundra state, more easily described as a form of suspended animation. It just goes like, everything's going really bad. Squeeze all the water out of my body with only a tiny bit like a molecule left. Okay, now I'm just going to sit here for ages. Sit there for ages and ages and ages until someone gives me some more water.
It's amazing that they can survive that, isn't it?
Yeah, they're pretty indestructible.
Also,
do you know how long tardigrades have been around for?
I think it was 500,000 million years.
Is that the same tardigrade? Is that just the one tardigrade that's continually put itself into cryptobiosis and lived for ages?
You could check my information text, because it says it there.
I'll have to put it on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right, Sarah, what are you going to do? Are you going to stick with the wolf, or are you going
to
go...
Yeah, no, I'm going to stick with the wolf. So if it was in the southern hemisphere, I think I'd be okay, because, you know, they populate the northern hemisphere. They're actually, historically, they have the largest range of any land mammal other than people. So they're, you know, they can pretty much go anywhere.
That's pretty impressive. What about, like, elephants and stuff? Like, because they trek for miles.
Yeah, no, they can... Well, elephants, you know, different temperature, you know, temperature rises or...
What about whales? They go millions of miles. Yeah, whales. What about whales?
I said land mammal.
Oh, yeah.
Land mammal. Also, most people think that wolves can only really survive in cold environments. They can actually live down to minus 50 degrees to up to 48 degrees, you know? So they can, you know, they have a pretty wide range of the temperatures they can live in.
Especially for a mammal, that's really impressive, because their body temperature is like... has to stay at 37 degrees. You might not know, but do you have any idea how they maintain like their body temperature in those conditions?
Yeah, they have lots of fur.
But they do have a very thick coat of fur.
Yeah.
They also...
Do they sweat?
Oh.
They must do. I think most mammals do.
But also they're opportunistic hunters. So, you know, if their usual prey is not around, then they would just find another one, you know, because they are opportunistic. So I think they'd be okay.
And not fussy eaters by any means.
Well, obviously, they have their favourite types of food, you know, a big deer or something, but...
You were going to say a big steak.
A big steak?
A Vietnamese steak would probably actually be about the same thing.
It probably would be, actually.
So, I think pretty strong case for the wolf there.
That is a good case.
Thanks.
All right, Emma.
Okay, so now we've got mole lives in the desert. They're used to pretty dark... varying temperatures, because most people know that the desert's really hot in the day and really, really cold at night. It's one of the hardest environments to survive in anyway. So, you know, I mean, a meteor crashing into Earth probably isn't going to make it all that different. It depends where it lands, obviously. But I think their plan would mostly to just be to burrow under the sand, their underground burrows where they live and they raise their young, and they can get pretty deep. I'm not quite sure how deep, definitely over 6 feet or so. So they just burrow into the ground. Just live out their days there. They can eat insects. They can just eat anything that comes their way. And they have really good hearing. So they might have got a headache because they probably would have heard the meteor crash, and that would have caused a bit of a disorientation period.
That'd be an issue for the wolves as well.
Yeah.
It'd be more of an issue.
But, I mean, yeah, they might have got quite a bad headache. Their hearing might need to recover for a while. But I think
they'd
be...
that it was in the Southern Hemisphere.
Okay, thanks for that. But I think they'd be pretty fine. They could just burrow underground for a while. They can get water because sand holds water quite deep. So they can find water tables and it can trickle down. So I think they'll just live out their days underground, really.
Yeah.
That's the plan. Wow.
Think, difficult one.
You've all given really good arguments for that.
That might be the best scenario we've ever tried on Green Shores.
My one was the shortest.
Yeah,
that's
my
true.
One was just basically two words and then an explanation to why it was just those two words.
Worryingly, you're much better at being concise than all the science communication students.
Yeah. Maybe we're in the wrong profession.
I don't know. Right, okay, so... I kind of want everyone to win on that one because I think.
Well, you're the judge.
Okay.
You could just say draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to say that's a three-way draw because those were all really good arguments.
That's also the first draw we've ever had on Creature Wars.
Controversial.
Yeah. Yay!
I've been tempted to say no one wins before, but I've never been tempted to say that everyone wins. So,
woo-hoo!
Well done, everyone.
We all survived the meteor.
Yay!
Yay! Well done.
And on to the next scenario. Your creature's habitat is under threat. How will you convince politicians that it is worth protecting?
Okay.
Who's going to go first?
Me.
All right. Go on then, Max.
I have two options. One, completely ignore it because I can live absolutely anywhere. I can even live in the inner workings of a nuclear bomb.
Can you?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah, I could probably just live in the inner workings of one of the nuclear bombs that people have in the military. Or Or if I decided to do something, what I would do is try to get the German candy company Haribo to release a line of gummy tardigrades that should also be able to survive extreme heat, cold, and radiation.
Delicious and cute.
Such a good idea.
And almost indestructible.
Okay, right. Yeah, that sounds. Like quite a good idea. So you think politicians like sweets?
Don't know, but it might work. But most people do like sweets.
Most people
Trump
do.
Is kind of the colour of an orange. So.
Oh well, I think we're yes. all gonna die if that's the politician that we're going for.
Let's assume it's a UK.
What
politician.
About Jeremy Corbyn though? He doesn't like sugar.
It's sugar free Haribo.
My third option is try to get either Beanie Boo or Build-A-Bear to make a line of teddy tardigrades.
So fluffy tardigrades.
Mm. Yeah, fluffy tardigrades. Or my other option is do nothing.
Okay.
Because I could probably also just like live under a paving stone if I felt like it.
So really, you're pretty low maintenance.
Yeah, I basically, if I was being lazy, just like sit there and do nothing.
You don't even need the politicians, really.
I don't even need to bother about politicians. I could just lie
there. Lucky you.
I just like kick back on a deck chair and go like, yeah, I don't have to do anything. Yes.
Okay. All right, Sarah. How are you going to get wolves to protect your habitat?
Yeah. So I think.
So
this
what did I say then?
Habitat for the wolves.
I think it would be quite an easy one for wolves, just because wolves are well known to be ecosystem engineers. So that means basically, if you reintroduce wolves, you're going to have a huge number of ecological effects down the line. So one of the examples I can use is the Yellowstone National Park, when they reintroduced wolves in 1995. It was only a small number of wolves, but they managed the trees because there were so many deer there. The wolves started killing the deer, and then the trees were able to grow because the deer weren't grazing on the trees so much. So the trees pretty much quintupled in
Great
size.
Word,
yeah,
Great
thanks.
I don't even think that is a word.
I'm going to stand by it. They they basically quintupled. So it enhanced the growth of the trees. Mm. So in areas in Britain, you know, where increased flooding is occurring, if you increase the amount of trees, you can basically tackle that major issue of flooding because you reduce the amount of runoff. So you're basically saving a huge amount of money just by introducing a few number of wolves. So I feel like that's my best case.
Yeah, that's convincing really good. Politicians. How do they increase the number of trees?
So as I said, they would basically kill off the deer and basically maybe some of the sheep as well. But
they eat all the herbivores, basically.
Yeah, so they basically allow, if the vegetation has been completely degraded, they move the sheep or the deer away so the trees are allowed to grow. And it actually can happen in a quite short amount of time. So just a number of years.
Deer culling, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The whole debate over whether to cull deers would be gone.
Yeah, it's also way more effective. You know, in Yellowstone National Park, humans had tried to control it themselves with culling, but it hadn't worked. Mm. So that was a really clever solution to that problem.
Okay, I think that's a really good argument, okay? Right. Emma, you've had kind of bad luck with the scenarios for your creature.
The Nymphaea golden mole in general, I don't think politicians would really care about them all that much because they live in the desert. And to be honest, I know that we said the desert habitat is under threat, but in all honesty, with global warming, desertification is likely to be a huge, bigger problem. So I think their habitat's actually probably going to grow. If it was under threat, you could potentially argue, as I mentioned previously, because they have this cool apparatus in their eardrums, the hammer bone is really big and it detects vibrations and bangs on different parts of the ear to show where the vibrations are coming from. You could argue that if you study Namib golden moles, you could potentially come up with more accurate ways of either predicting earthquakes or just kind of noticing where they're coming from. But I'm actually going to go with my wild card because I think this is a pretty difficult one.
I thought that was a really great try.
To advanced technology, I would totally go with that.
Mini pigs. My wild card is mini pigs. Well, this is actually somewhat easier in that I don't really know what habitat mini pigs actually have other than that they live on... Well, they're kind of bred, aren't they? And they live in farms. So if they're living on farms and the habitat is under threat, then farms are under threat and that's a major problem. So the politicians really need to get behind saving the habitat for the mini pigs. And they're a really cute emblem. They're really small. They could fit in teacups if this is the kind of mini pig I'm thinking of.
Also potential for chimeras to grow organs and things. You know that new study that's just come out.
So you can potentially...
Probably shouldn't be helping you.
That's fine. If you want to use the mini pig cells in laboratories to help potentially grow organs or to develop... and look at how humans develop, then they're a really good thing to use. So I think politicians would really get behind the mini pigs because of their cuteness, their versatility, and if their habitats, aka farms, are under threat, then you've got a huge problem and you need to fix it.
That is true. Yeah, people have them as pets as well, don't they? So that their other habitat is probably like really large houses in LA.
So your options are people's houses are dying or the farms are going. And so really, if that's the case, humans have a huge problem.
Do they actually fit inside a teacup?
Well, teacup pigs do. No. It depends how mini the mini pig is.
Apparently, there's actually no such thing as a micro pig.
No, they just grow.
Yeah, they just grow and they basically get up to, you know, quite. Just normal pig size.
Right, baby pig instead of mini pig.
Do you mean pygmy pigs? Is that kind of what, like.
I can't say I put a lot of thought into writing that.
That's on Google mini pigs. I'm not sure if they actually fit inside teacups.
No, I mean teapots. You could fit them inside small pans.
Okay, I think anyway, it's time to wind up this ramble. And it's hard to choose. It's not going to be the mini pigs.
I golden mole for the first minute. I did try.
It was a strong case at the start, I think. Yeah. I think you should have stuck with the mole.
Yes. The pigs are pretty convincing, though.
I don't.
What? If farms are under threat, if people's houses are under threat, the politicians have to do something. That is literally their job.
Except defeat, care. Emma.
It's more of a problem than the desert.
Yeah.
Okay, so... I am the judge.
No.
And I've decided that I'm going to let the wolves win on this occasion. So that makes our final result a tie between Sarah and Max.
Yeah.
Well done. I'm happy with that.
Cute. Well, yeah. They're very functional.
I definitely will Google them, and I will put on our Twitter account some nice pictures of Namib golden moles.
I'm a sore loser. Emma was a sore loser, and here's a picture of a mole.
And I'll also put tardigrades and wolves. Yeah. I think that's a really cool fact about wolves. Mm. Like it. There's a video that's going around Facebook which you can watch and see that.
Yeah,
we'll post it to our Twitter.
It's how wolves changed rivers.
George Monbiot, or as I've pronounced it in my head for many years, George Moinbot. Anyway, let's say bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.